This is Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous, the radio program that challenges the anti-aging cultural narrative for women in midlife. Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous is produced at CJSF 90.1 FM, the campus-based community station at Simon Fraser University, which is located on the unceded ancestral homelands of the Squamish, Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem peoples. We broadcast a new episode on the second Wednesday of the month between 10 and 11 a.m. I'm Robin Erickson, and I talk with women who are aging outside the beauty myth and into their power, honoring their experience and celebrating their strength. This is episode number 6 of Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous. And my guest today is Christine Germano, who is an arts-based researcher who uses photography to work with youth to expand the conversation and our collective understanding of what is climate. Hi, Christine, and thanks for being my guest today.
Thank you for inviting me.
I want to just start the program by asking you what your own triple threat is. I realized that when I named the program Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous, that those three things are in themselves a triple threat to the patriarchy, but that we as women all have our own sort of trifecta superpower. And they're each as individual as we are. So I'm curious as to how you might define what those are for you.
For me, I think the three main things that I would say are my triple power would be my boldness. I'm quite straight up. And also, I think it's really important to be as independent as possible.
Those seem to kind of interplay and support one another also.
Yes, definitely. And as an artist, finding a job means that sometimes, you know, you can write emails and you can write emails, but it really won't get you past the front door until you literally pick up the phone and just make that person-to-person phone call. I recently did 3 pretty big interviews in Toronto a few weeks ago. And really, those happened from me, like, just writing a letter straight to the CEO, like going past everyone and going straight to the top. And I must admit, if I know there's a woman at the top and I'm writing that letter to a woman, that for me, I'm willing to take that leap a little bit more so. And it's proven to be quite... it's a good strategy, I guess. It's worked for me. And then being straight up is a really difficult thing. I think as women, we are expected to bite our tongue. We are expected to sort of go, well, you know, do I really want to make a wave? You know, and then it's a question of, am I making a wave or am I just simply stating what my needs are? And by being straight up as a photographer, you know, I found out the hard way that it was much easier for me to just say, I would really like to take a photograph of you. Can you sign this release form? But there was always this fear that I had in the beginning. Like I was afraid to just be straight up with what I wanted to say. Where I came from, that came from, I have no idea. And then I think the other thing is being independent. I mean, not that I say everybody has to have a car, but because I grew up in the country and I was kilometers from places. There was no public bus. There was nothing. So from a very young age at 16, my father pushed me to get my own license for the very reason of he never wanted me to have to depend on a man to drive me anywhere, to get me to a job, that he brought my sister and I up to be, that we would be independent no matter what. We would survive. We would have our skills and we would have the tools we need to survive without a man. And so I think those three things, and a lot of people do find those three things, I hear the term aggressive, and I like to replace it with assertive.
Absolutely, and hear, hear to that. But it's often that when, as women at any age, we demonstrate talents or skills that are sort of outside of what that cis feminine normative container looks like to people, that, you know, we are angry and we are aggressive and that we are outside of, you know, the nice pink bow around our neck. So,
or if you have managed to succeed, then it's, well, oh, because you're pretty, or because you're this or you're that. And never is it because you're an amazing photographer, or that, Christine, you've worked 25 years to get to this point. It's, oh, you're so lucky. Am I really lucky? I don't think so. I work my butt off to get where I am, quite honestly.
Right, yeah.
So,
and yeah. You're pretty, too.
And I'm pretty, too. That comes with age, too, finding your own beauty as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really curious, with all of the women that I talk to on this radio show, about three very specific things. And daring is one of them. Partly because I think that daring plays an interesting role in our lives in general. But I'm really curious, as we age as women, how we think about ourselves as daring or not daring, and if that daring is different than when we were kids, or if we do things that we feel are daring, or if other people think we're daring. There's all kinds of different ways to look at it. What's your take on daring? What does that mean to you?
Well, definitely, like, over time, yes, your daring changes in a different way. Physically, what you do in a daring way changes. You know, as you get older as a photographer, carrying 20 kilos on your back, hiking up a hill with kids in 100-degree weather is a lot more tiring than it was when you were 35. And so, but on the other hand, it's like, well, I still want to do it. I do not want to stop because of that. But then these little things pop up where your body starts to, you know, feel the aches in the knees or in your feet or whatever. And all of a sudden, you start looking at risk factor in comparison to being the daring woman. And it's like, do I need to put my risk factor up to here so that I've then broken my wrist and I'm out of commission for a year or 6 months or whatever? And so when I was 35, yes, I was jumping on dog sleds in Greenland, and always a lot of fear in the back of my head, because I think fear is a very good thing to have. Or jumping on a helicopter to hover over, you know, a glacier, with just being strapped into the helicopter while a scientist went out and actually stood on a glacier while we're hovering in a, and then, you know, you realize, oh, my buckle unclipped while I was doing those pictures, and you're like, oh, I could have just slipped, you know. And you know, I had incidents on a dog sled where we were trying to beat a ship coming into an icebreaker, and the dog sled was going to cut right in front of the icebreaker, and the dogs actually at one point were attracted to the back of the icebreaker and fell right in the ocean. And so that's when I called the, okay, we are past danger level, and, you know, called out to basically get on a different, on a snowmobile and get off the dog sled, because I was like, no, I'm not ready to risk my life today for photography. But as a photographer, you're like, wait a minute, I got to get on that dog sled. I got to go with them to do the polar bear hunt or the seal hunt or the walrus hunt. And that being said, when you put risk, then I'm the only woman on this excursion. And all the men don't speak English. And you know they're making sexual comments about you, looking at each other, you know. But you can't let it react. I mean, as a woman, I think we always have eyes on the back of our heads. you're always cautionary to that. And if you're a documentary photographer and you're traveling around by yourself, you know, as I became older and started traveling to more places, you know, all of a sudden you started to be like, okay, I got to be a little bit more cautious than this. I have to stop at 3 beers. I can't go beyond that because something could happen. I've been at a bar in Marshall Islands where I had a man sort of attack, not physically attack me, but verbally, sexually attack me. And he was an American. And I happened to be sitting with a bunch of Marshallese men who knew me because I was teaching in the schools. So I have a good reputation with that community. When that man started to, I had to actually stand up for myself and say, hey, you can't, don't talk about my pussy in front of these people. I'm a professional. I'm here to do teaching. And you are having an effect on who I am in this community because you're attracted to me and I'm not attracted to you. And I've said no. Luckily, all these men knew me and they stood up behind me and it was ended very quickly. But I had to raise my voice and I had to stand up. If we were in a different place, I could have been smacked in the face or it could have turned very differently. So with all that daring, I only take dares where I know it's safe for me to take the dare as well. I mean, so it's a really interesting question, though. It makes you think about all these different things. Did that kind of answer?
Yeah. And it is complex, right? Because I think that we play with this line and daring means different things to each of us. And it can really depend on where we are in place and time. And just what our own sort of level of expansion feels like, because it's really different. To me, there's something about daring that is also about the level of vulnerability that we can kind of, like, at what point do we let our guard down and just be human?
Mm.
You know? Because I think that there's part of daring that isn't so much about the outside in the world and being kind of bravado, but how does it feel?
Well, it's like you've made me think about two things. One is I think about quite a bit. I do homestays, so I stay in communities and villages. I'll be sleeping on a floor. Probably see a rat run across the room here and there. There's, you name it. I've had, you know, scabies, parasites, worms, you know, and these are all the things you decide to live in the community. You know, in Russia, literally had to take a shit in a bucket. Like, there was not a flush toilet. And so there's all these levels of human, like, your own daringness can, you know, can I handle without a shower for a whole week? You know, can I live in this house, you know, without all these things that I'm used to, my comforts and my privacy? Because when you go to places like the South Pacific, the level of privacy is reduced immensely. 20 people are sharing a house and everyone's sleeping on mats out in the open. And so, you know, you have to kind of say, I'm going to get through this fear, because the good side is you experience this really beautiful, you know, opportunity to experience the community and culture firsthand. But I think, I don't know, does that kind of answer? Like, you have to sort of be a little daring and trust, but you have to trust your gut. I think as a woman, we have a really big gut signal that goes off and we have to listen to it. And if there's the slightest thing, I've learned over time that if my gut goes off, I exit. Like, I'm out of there. I find a way out politely and I leave. The other thing that brought up was when I first started doing or was asked to do this climate change project with this not-for-profit that was connected to the UN. So it was a pretty big project. The first place was Alaska to go to. And I remember my boss saying, oh, well, we're going to get, you know, Lawrence to go with you. The idea of me as a woman, 36 years old, going by myself to the Arctic, working in a community, was sort of beyond him. Like, he couldn't imagine that I could do it by myself. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I had this guy coming with me who had never worked with Indigenous kids, who had never worked with kids at all. Like, he was a good photographer, but that wasn't his platform. He was there to take more awesome, pretty pictures, not to necessarily work with Indigenous kids. But I had to work with him because my boss was afraid of a woman working by herself. And then Greenland was the next one. And then it became very apparent that I was now partnered with someone who is not a community-based artist and was actually making it hard for me. He had a bad attitude. So I had to pick up a phone to my boss and say, I am not working with this man. I can work by myself. And I had to be bold and outspoken.
And straight up.
And straight up. Even though this man has three daughters of his own, in the back of his head, he was afraid to let me travel by myself, that I wouldn't be able to handle it. And so, you know, that's the other thing that comes from this whole daring thing. It's like, it's assumed that a woman can't be that daring either. I'm going to lose out on opportunities to do documentary projects because I'm a small little woman and I'm not strong enough to do it by myself. So yeah, that's the other thing I was thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love how all of that comes together in all of these sort of nuanced and very subtle ways, and the recognition of really just listening to our gut about things that keep us safe, you know, and that we can be daring and take those risks as long as we're just paying attention to those eyes on the back of our head and, you know, that feeling in our gut, which is kind of a learning unto itself, right? To really be able to trust ourselves and nobody else, you know? And it has...
I think there's also a strength in there. Like, I think that women... Well, I'm not going to say women. I'm going to say I know from my own experience. When I was younger, I put myself in vulnerable... Like, in danger because... Oh, maybe there's a potential of a guy, or I want to be loved and I want to feel belonged. And so all of a sudden, I'm keeping myself in a situation that is probably could become dangerous. But my need to have love and to feel accepted by a man is putting me in a situation of vulnerability where I should just have the self-esteem to say, I don't need that man and I don't need to be loved by anybody except for myself. So we put ourselves in these vulnerable positions because we're seeking out that thing that we're afraid to do for ourselves.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And it's beautiful that we hopefully get into a place as we age where we're recognizing that we don't need to do that anymore and we can really like sort of co-opt that self-love for our own purposes. But tragic that, you know, as young women, I think that resonates a lot. You know, that looking for love in all the wrong places kind of mantra, right? I want to pause for a song break and then come back and talk a little bit more, change gears a little bit and talk about curiosity. But you brought a song with you to play. Well, you brought two songs, but we're going to play one of them. Do you want to introduce what we're going to hear?
Let's do Believe first. Imagine Dragons. Believer.
Taking my soak into the masses, writing my poems for the few that look at me, took to me, shook at me, feeling me, singing from heartache, from the pain, taking my message from the veins, speaking my lesson from the brain, seeing the beauty through the...
Welcome back to Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous. My name is Robin Erickson, and I am in studio with my guest today, Christine Germano. We've been talking a little bit about what it means as a woman, and a woman who is of the ripe old age of 50-ish to be daring. And as I said before the song break, I want to move the conversation and talk about curiosity, because I also think that curiosity plays an interesting role as we age, and it's different than when we're younger women, younger people. What does curiosity mean to you at this stage of the game?
Right now, my curiosity is, and I think this has a lot to do with completing my master's degree a year and a half ago of Arts for Social Change, is now my curiosity is looking back at everything I've done in the last 10 or 15 years, and I'm sort of seeing it from a completely different perspective. I'm looking at all this writing and photography by the youth I've worked with as a rich resource of learning about different communities and cultures, their needs, what's important to them, and actually having the bravery to now write actual academic papers, submitting them into journals, and taking art and sort of taking it to the next level. And I guess there's a little piece of me that wants to prove to the academics that what we do as artists and what we do with communities is really important and really substantial, what comes out of that. And you can learn so much about it if you know what you're reading or what you're seeing. And it's how just understanding art and the different perspectives of understanding art as you get older. And then also even just from a bigger career standpoint, I mean, I've always thought about, obviously I work in communities with youth, but now I'm sort of thinking beyond that, like not just an exhibit. I want to do things that are about permanent exhibits, about kids educating kids in public spaces, creating content, creating educational material that is actually written and photographed by children, for children. And so looking at education from a completely different perspective and how to educate using the arts and how we need to learn how to do to be more diverse with how we're delivering education to our youth. And so where I've come in the last 15, 20 years from that place of just kind of like, I want to do a cool art project with kids, to where I am now. And I must admit, and writing books. That's the other thing. I'm kind of right now about 3 or 4 book ideas that I'm working on. And I think if you had asked me that 10 years ago, I would have said, no way. I there's no way I could do that. So I guess my curiosity now is to push my intellectual academic side more. Now that I have all this understanding of art, indigenous people, climate, social issues, I want to push the academic part of my brain. And I'm considering like even a PhD. And this is something, again, I never would have considered, never would have thought I would have been smart enough to do it. So I think what I learned through the master's degree is with discipline, you know, and a schedule and good planning, it's so doable. Anybody could do it. But I think, you know, as a young girl, I never thought I was smart enough, really, to go to university. So I did it when I was 40, in my 40s instead.
As I think a lot of women do, I know a lot of women who have gone back to school later in life. And in some ways, it does make it easier because we have all of this life experience to sort of apply to the learning and the theories. I think, again, you know, the things that we're sort of allowed to be curious about as women kind of fit into a pigeonhole, right? Mm-hmm. We're not led to be curious about science and mechanical things. And I think that that's changing, but definitely for my generation, for our generation, that was still very much, you know, girls get the pink toys and boys get the blue toys. And there was sort of a stream of, well, you can be curious about these things, but you can't be curious about these other things.
Well, you know, thank God for Greta. It's like, but science, yes, science and art. So that's what I've been specializing in climate. And so here I was, I don't know, I think it's been 10 years ago, and I found myself in Copenhagen at the climate change talks. And I looked around and I was like, men. And yes, there are women out there, but even with organizations, and I won't say which organizations, but science centers and aquariums that I've had affiliations with, when I finally got through the doors and into the back office and such, it was mostly all men. And the idea of a woman coming in, and I've even had men, in Chukotka, Russia, I came face to face with a professor from Alberta who was doing documentary work on Indigenous people in Chukotka. And he happened to, I had been out there for 6 weeks, hadn't really run into anybody that spoke English, let alone a Canadian. So when I found out three Canadians were coming into the village, I was literally sitting on the doorstep. Oh my God, like, hello. And his first words was to me was, what are you doing here? And I said, oh, I'm working with, you know, Indigenous youth. He's like, how? Why? I am Mr. Chukotka. I'm the only person out here working with the Indigenous community out here. And he was just blown away that it, as a woman, by like that I was out there doing this work. Like, who let me do it? I've also set up the exhibit at an aquarium where all of a sudden one of the men working there said, whose work is this? And I said, that's my work. And he was like, really? How on earth did you manage to get this job? And I was like, 20 years of working with Indigenous youth, initially on the topic of suicide. Working on the topic of climate is easy compared to that.
Mm. The thing that is striking me about what you're saying, you know, about this fellow scientist, or this man who was a scientist, not your fellow peer scientist, is his lack of curiosity that you could be doing the work that you're doing, and how that interplays with the things that create obstacles and barriers for us to be able to really follow our passion and follow our dreams. You know, one of the things that you said earlier in the show was that being bold and straight up and
independent,
yeah, were your sort of trifecta, superpower, triple threat. How did those play out in terms of how you live your curiosity?
Oh, how do you... My curiosity. Well, I was just thinking of a story, actually. This one takes place in Greenland, Thule Air Base, and I had been working with the University of Minnesota. They had an expedition to go into the center of Greenland and dog sled in. Well, they needed somebody to be working in the communities, doing the community part, the science part with the kids. And, I lost it.
That's okay.
I remember. So they were doing a part of this was there are two science stations in the middle of Greenland, and they wanted to be able to haul fuel across the Arctic or across the Greenlandic ice sheet to the two bases rather than flying it in because of expenses and such. And so they had this big, huge plan on how to move this with these huge tractor trailers and everything else. And there was a whole group of American scientists and such all sitting in the room, maybe 12 people. And then it dawned on me. You know, here I am out here doing climate change work. And I thought, well, what if that big bladder of gasoline, diesel fuel, rips open? So I put my hand up. Well, what happens if the bladder breaks open? Like, we're a huge bladder, huge, huge, huge. And everyone just kind of stopped and they said, well, we'll just mark off the territory and we'll let everyone know that that's where it is. And that was the end of it. That it wasn't going to be cleaned up, that none of, like, that was just, it was just dismissed. And when I asked that question, everyone looked at me like, oh my God, she's asking the question that nobody would want to ask or be answered, but you wouldn't dare because you're lucky enough to be on the project sort of thing. You know, I was even sort of, I've been in one of the things that was the hardest in my career working with kids was having to report a child molester. And I remember going to a conference in Washington where I was a speaker on a panel of journalists, and someone actually from the audience asked, you know, when you work in communities, do you ever come across kids that have been abused? And if so, do you report it? Out of the five people on that panel, I was the only person that would report it. The other four people said they wouldn't dare because it would hurt their career. And I can tell you that is true. I suffered dearly in my career because I made that report. But, you know, these are the ethical choices you make. As a woman, as a teacher, I feel it's my responsibility to be a guardian for the youth I work with. And so if a child comes to me and says something or confesses something, then I'm obligated to report it.
Which I think is the law also.
It should be. But all of a sudden, women are penalized. And then, you know, there's serious lateral violence that comes from speaking up against the men in the community or who are hurting the children. And we see this all the time, you know. And it's a really difficult position to be in, you know. So, yeah, and how far does your curiosity go? Like, and this is another lesson, too, going into communities. I mean, learning the hard way, you know. Sometimes it's almost like you have to put a buffer on and you have to not get to know the community too well.
Yeah, that's interesting sort of take on curiosity too, right? Is that it can take you down the rabbit hole and maybe it's not all Alice in Wonderland.
No. And then you've gotten yourself in a situation where, you know, from a professional or from a, like my job, yeah, you have to know the boundaries. And I think, and that's the same thing what we were talking about with safety too. You know, 19-year-old girl getting drunk with a bunch of guys. Oh, I'm curious to see if one of these guys is going to like me. Oh, but what happens later on? What kind of chance are you putting yourself in? And, yeah, what kind of hole are you digging for yourself? And it's just, and it's unfortunate. As women, we have to be extra careful. We have to build the eyes in the back of our head. We have to listen to the gut. I don't know if men have to do that as often as we do. I wonder.
Differently, for sure. Yeah, absolutely differently. The other thing that sometimes curiosity in my own mind gets attached to is sort of keeping an open mind about things. And after life experience and all sorts of, you know, been there, seen that, done that, how do you keep your inquiry fresh? How does it not become jaded in your mind? And how do you stay hopeful? How do you stay curious, really? Like,
I think I travel a lot, and I must say I think that keeps me really curious. I am probably unlike a lot of people. I don't do a lot of research into the places I'm going. I like it to be a surprise. Why ruin the surprise? Let them teach you all about the place you're going to. I, as Paulo says, I'm an expert of not being an expert. But also, what's the question again?
Just how to keep yourself not jaded.
And I think art galleries too. Like, I love art, you know, and we just went to go see
Cindy Sherman.
Amazing. And she is so inspiring. So inspiring, I went twice. And, you know, I was in Ottawa just a few weeks ago. I went to the National Gallery. And I think, honestly, being involved in any kind of arts, and whether it's poetry, theater, even going to the movie, you know, I think, and silence too. I enjoy sitting on my balcony for half an hour with a cup of tea and my sketchbook and no noise, no music, nothing, not even my phone, just staring out into nothingness and allowing your brain to empty. And I think that's really important. And my animals were my inspiration. I know it sounds crazy. My dogs were my inspiration. You know, they dragged me out of the house every day for a walk. And every day you go for that walk to Trout Lake and back, there'd always be something. You know, you see, or a little thing that inspires you, a color, a sound, a piece of garbage. I don't know. I think that's, and dare I say, being single. I mean, I had great times with a lot of my ex relationships, but I found that my creativity tends to go down when I'm in a relationship. And that is mostly because I end up turning into I'm giving of myself. I am giving my energy to that person, to that relationship, so much so, usually unbalanced, that then it starts to have an effect on my creativity. These are all the things I've kind of discovered over the years. So, you know, wanting to be an artist means not just sacrificing not having kids, or maybe it's even not even having a relationship, like, or you find the right relationship. You can't sacrifice this need for love, that you're always going to make a trade-off, right? So it has to be a well-balanced thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely need space to let that inquiry percolate and bubble and to chase that process. To come up with the questions and to really feel like you're moving towards an answer, if there is even an answer.
And I think in my work, it's funny, like you said, what is climate? It used to be, what is climate change? And now we've changed the project to, what is climate? Because as time's gone on, I've realized that by opening the question up with no decisive, like keeping it as broad as possible, the answers that come are much richer and of so much more variety. So, yeah, I think it agrees with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How I hear that, what is climate versus what is climate change? That if we call it climate change, then it biases how we're getting the responses back, right?
Yeah.
Whereas leaving that question open, and it doesn't have to be about climate, it can be about any old topic, any old subject, any old inquiry, any old curiosity. And if it's open, then how we're receiving that information back is unbiased. And
this, it was the conversation I had with, I'm hoping, my colleague from Aurora College up in Yellowknife, Suzanne Robinson. And it was her idea of keeping it, like, what is climate? Because up in the North, what they see as climate and what maybe we see as climate in Vancouver, or what they see as climate in Mexico or in Toronto, is completely different. Our understanding of what climate is, because our understanding of climate is also a relationship to the land that we're on. And then, you know, so it's kind of, I really wanted to open the doors in understanding what an Inuit person or someone from the North's understanding of what they know as being climate, and then see what comes out of that. Are they seeing changes? Are they not seeing changes? Maybe there's only certain thing they're seeing changes in, instead of almost giving them the answer. You know, I want to wait and hear what the answer is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that shift. We're going to pause again for a song break and then come back and talk about wisdom.
Yes.
As our last segment.
And this song's by Pink. And it's Oh Perfect. Yes.
Made a wrong turn once or twice, dug my way out, blood and fire. Bad decisions, that's alright. Welcome to my silly life. Mistreated, displaced, misunderstood, missed. No, it's all good, it didn't.
I swallow the fear. The only thing I should be drinking is an ice cold beer. So cool in line, and we try, 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 but we try too hard, and it's a waste of my time. Done looking for the critics, cause they're everywhere. They don't like my jeans, they don't get my hair. Exchange ourselves, and we do it all the time. Why do we do that? Why do I do that? Why do I do that?
And that was Pink with the song Perfect. One of the song choices of my guest, Christine Germano, who is here with me on Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish and Fabulous. This is Campus Community Radio. And my name is Robin Erickson. And Christine and I have been talking about daring and what that means to sort of live with that and learn with that and play with that and curiosity and what it means to fall down the rabbit hole of curiosity or not. And the last thing that I want to get your sort of two cents about, maybe it's more than two cents, is wisdom. Because wisdom gets sort of thrown and bandied around as something that when we hit a certain elderhood, we should have it. And we should sort of know what that is and be able to wield it as something. And I'm not sure about what that means exactly, because wisdom is a big... It's big, mm-hmm. right? Or it feels big to me. And so I like to ask the women who come on the show how they understand wisdom. What does it mean to you? Do you have wisdom?
Oh.
Do you use wisdom?
I think wisdom is an ongoing process. Definitely. Yes, I think I have become more wise over the years. So many years ago, I think where I really started to piece together my own wisdom, partially I would say was after my brother had committed suicide 23 years ago, and I started going to personal counseling about that and started to unpeel, you know, the onion of why I reacted to things the way I did, and there was actual reasons behind it. And then as I grew older, for some reason that still wasn't getting deep down enough. And lucky for me, or I'm fortunate, through my First Nations connection and work, I started to go to a local sweat lodge, and where I was introduced to the medicine wheel and these four parts, you know, of your body, your mind, your soul, your spirit. I think I'm probably missing one. But I realized that is the trick. You have to balance all those four things out. And as you get older, balancing those things out becomes much harder, especially when your hormones go sideways on you. When just when you think you've got it figured out, then the big M comes and you're like, what the heck is this? You know, I was literally in shock. I couldn't believe what my body was going through. And it took me a couple years to figure it out. And now I have the balance back. And so, you know, there was the wisdom of learning about my body, you know. And I think the other thing that I would really like to talk about in regards to wisdom is really learning how to pick my battles, like really pick my battles. And sometimes, I mean, I'm a very outspoken person, so learning to not speak, like to just be quiet. And sometimes actually my silence is way stronger. And this was something that I discovered, that sometimes just sitting back and letting people figure it out for themselves, all of a sudden I wasn't as aggressive or as assertive. Being patient, learning patience, I think is the big thing that I was trying to say, is that through aging, you learn to become more patient. And I think you appreciate time. it's not all about the, oh my God, I gotta get there in 5 minutes. It's more like, how long can I stretch this 5 minutes? Like, I want this 5 minutes to be 10 minutes. Like, it's like, I want to take time and just make it stretch. And because you have all these things you want to do now and you know what you want to do. I think that's the power, is you figure out what your strength is and now you want to do something with it. And so this all comes into the play of the wisdom. You know, I think I appreciate what people, through even my, I always have, but experiential, what people experience in their lives, that's their richness, that's their degree, their life degree sort of thing. So I think as wisdom has gone on, as I've gotten older, I've learned to appreciate those things in others, and I've learned to appreciate it in myself. You know, what I've learned through my brother's suicide, in some ways, it's taken me 25 years to slowly unwrap all of that and really understand that and how it affected all of my family's life and my life and how much my whole career changed. Everything I do has changed because of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. Seeing yourself a little bit more real, too. You know, I'm able to point out, you know, oh, I was really wrong there. And admit it, feel bad about it, guilty. And it's like, okay, how am I going to make sure I never do that again? Number one. Number two, can I fix that? And how can I fix it? You know, and I think that's the comes with maturity. You know, I mean, I used to be such a insecure person, low self-esteem. I would, even my counselor said, you know, Christine wouldn't just hold the little birdie. I would like choke the little birdie. And so now I've learned, you know, to let the birdie sit on my finger and eat as it wants and fly away. And I'm not so concerned about, you know, if it doesn't work out, if a relationship doesn't work out or it ends, for me, it's not the end of the world anymore. Like, that was something that finally I came into my own strength and realized, well, it's just a passing of time. It hasn't worked out. We move along and keep going, you know. I remember, and I stuck with my head for some reason today, so I'm just, ex-boyfriend of mine who had, you know, screwed around on me, and I was so brokenhearted, and I've called my dad in tears, crying. This is in my 20s. When is it going to get better? And my father said, it doesn't. It doesn't get better, Christine. It actually gets harder. So you're going to have to learn how to get a thicker skin. And that was like my father's advice to me and my broken heart crying at 26 or whenever it was. And, you know, actually, I really wish someone had taken me to the side at 13 or 14 and said, okay, relationships are fun. Don't get yourself all bent out of shape in the Anna Green Gables. Oh, I've fallen in love and all of this stuff. That stuff isn't real. It's what we see in the movies. And unfortunately, young girls come into age, you know, as a teenager thinking, oh, I'm going to get married and it's all going to be great and I'm going to have kids. But yet no one sits them down and says, okay, if you want to have kids, that might actually mean that you're giving up your career. Or make sure you have a partner that supports that. And then how many partners are out there that are going to support that? So you have to you're making these choices at a really young age without really being completely informed about what you're really getting into.
It's hard to know what you're really getting into until you're in the thick of things, for sure. And the story that you tell about your dad saying about the thick skin reminds me of a similar story that my grandma tells about celebrating her 25th anniversary. And it was at the same time as her aunt's 50th wedding anniversary. And so they had a co-celebration. And my grandma asked her great aunt if it got any easier, you know, did married life get any easier? And the advice to my grandmother was that it was work. It was work the whole way through, right? And And it, so it's a similar kind of thing, you know. It's like it doesn't just happen and it's a bed of roses. It's this energy and this investment that we put into life that rewards us with that, the value that we get out of life.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I never ended up having children. I never ended up getting married. And now getting together for a high school, whatever, reunion, everyone sits around the table with these big googly eyes admiring me, jealous of me. You're so lucky you never got married. You're so lucky you never had children. And meanwhile, I can remember like 2 or 3 years where I was literally crying in silence that I was never able to have my own child. And but yet I'm sitting there and they're each one of them telling me their horror stories of their marriages that went really bad and that they hung on to them because of their children and that they walked out of a 25-year marriage feeling like a dish towel. Possibly the kids hate you anyways. You've lost everything. And then you, at the end of it, these women are looking at me going, I never pursued a career. I never pursued my dream. And now I'm 45, 50 years old and I have nothing. Nothing. And it's, oh, it's so heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I say to them, I said, you know, you realize that, you know, I'm poor.
There's still time.
I'm a poor artist. I drive a 20-year-old car. I rent in a, and I still live in communal housing, like with two other people. But they're like, yeah, but your life is so rich, you know. So what is written, what is important to you? You have to really be clear on that when you're younger. And I don't think we prepare young women for that, about really understanding what it means to do all that, or how do you balance that so that, because how are you going to be a good mother and feel good about yourself if you're not also filling yourself back up? Like you need to do self-care, and part of self-care is fulfilling our own dreams. Everybody has their dreams and they need to be fulfilled.
I have to cut our conversation off here, which is unfortunate because I feel like we could talk about this next, you know, how do we fulfill our dreams in a good way? But thank you. I want to acknowledge my guest, Christine Germano, who has been my guest here on Triple Threat today, feminist, 50-ish and fabulous. You can connect with me at Aging with Imagination on Facebook, where you'll find links to the audio archive for this show, and you can find them at cjsf.ca under the program schedule. Intervene us by date. I am Robin Erickson. I have been your host, and see you next month with a continuation of this conversation where we challenge the anti-aging cultural narrative for women in midlife.